English radio programs, including the programs, as you said, that was about an Iranian national hero in the time of British occupation, as well as programs about various facts regarding energy and gas costs around the world. So please accept our appreciations to you. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Simone Santini from Italy. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands has sent us an email. Rob says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, my name is Rob Den Boer and I live in the city of Hainaut, Netherlands. It is with pleasure that I hereby confirm your broadcast. Please listen to audio file attached. If this report is accepted as correct, please send me your verification. Thank you so much." Salam and greetings to you, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, and thank you very much for sending this email to us. We are glad that our signals are heard in your region, in your city, Hainaut, Netherlands. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, and please accept our EQSL card as a verification. And here we come to the end of this edition of Listener's Special. But before saying goodbye, I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, express my condolences on the occasion of Arba'in, which this year happened to be yesterday, September 17th. And for your information, Arba'in is the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, as well as his companions, in the year 61 AH. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. Have a good time and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قالوا آمنا برب العالمين
They said, we have believed in the Lord of the world.
رب موسى وهارون
The Lord of Moses and Aaron.
قال آمنتم له قبل أن آذن لكم إنه لكبيركم الذي علمكم السحر فلسوف تعلمون لأقطعن أيديكم وأرجلكم من خلاف ولأصلبنكم أجمعين
Pharaoh said, You believed Moses before I gave you permission. Indeed, he is your leader who has taught you magic, but you are going to know. I will surely cut off your hands and your feet on opposite sides, and I will surely crucify you all.
Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this 49th verse of chapter Shu'ara. قُلْ أَمَنْتُمْ لَهُ قَبْلَ أَنْ أَذَنَ لَكُمْ Pharaoh said, You have believed in him before I give you leave. إِنَّهُ لَكَبِيرُكُمُ الَّذِي عَلَّمَكُمُ السِّحْرِ Verily, he is the chief of you who taught you the sorcery. فَلَسَوْفَ تَعْلَمُونَ لَأُقَتِّعَنَّ أَيْدِيَكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ مِنْ خِلَافٍ وَلَأُصَلِّبَنَّكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ So, soon shall you know, I certainly will cut off your hands and your feet on opposite sides, and I certainly will crucify you all. To give you a short version of what has happened up to this point, as you were previously with us, we understood that in that gathering between Pharaoh and Aaron and all the people and all the sorcerers, the best of the best, the sorcerers were defeated. And since they were the experts in that field, since they knew that this cannot be magic, they believed in the Lord of the worlds, as they explicitly said, قَالُوا أَمَنَّا بِرَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ رَبِّ مُوسَى وَهَارُونَ The Lord of Moses and Aaron. At first, Pharaoh wanted all people to take permission for everything. He expected to control over people's minds and hearts. So he wanted people not to think and decide unless he allowed them. And this is what the oppressors have been doing throughout the history. قَالَ أَمَنْتُمْ لَهُ قَبْلَ أَنْ أَذَنَ لَكُمْ He said you believed in him before I give you leave. This unrestrained, conceited person did not even utter the name of Allah and Moses. He used only the pronoun لَهُ, which is here for scoffing. قَالَ أَمَنْتُمْ لَهُ قَبْلَ أَنْ أَذَنَ لَكُمْ This is how headstrong some people can be. However, Pharaoh did not get satisfied with this. He moved on to say two other sentences. Because he wanted to stabilize his situation, he wanted to suppress people's awakened consciences. So he first accused the wizards that this is a conspiracy, this was a pre-planned gathering, and you wanted to topple me, and this conspiracy is against all people of Egypt. He wanted to attract the ideas of commoners and common people. So he said, إِنَّهُ لَكَبِيرُكُمُ الَّذِي عَلَّمَكُمُ السِّحْرِ. Verily, he is the chief of you who taught you the sorcery. He accused them that they had planned such a program to deceive great people of Egypt. He said, and he claimed that you are trying to dominate people. He imputed them that they wanted to expel the real owners of that country and to put slaves in their places. He meant that he would not allow their conspiracy to be successful, and he would finally defeat it.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. So Pharaoh accused these believers, these true believers, these sorcerers that they were fighting previously on his side, that they are planning a conspiracy. So he continues, فَلَسَوْفَ تَعْلَمُونَ لَأُقَطِّعَنَّ أَيْدِيَكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ مِنْ خِلَافٍ وَلَأُصَلِّبَنَّكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. He said, so soon shall you know, certainly I will cut off your hands and your feet on opposite sides, and I certainly will crucify you all. It means that not only would they be killed totally, but also their death would be along with torture and suffering. For cutting the right hand and the left leg or otherwise will prolong man's death, and suffering and torture will be doubled. Pharaoh would kill them in the presence of people and on top of all palm trees. He said, I will crucify you all. But these experts, these true believers, were ready for this. And we will see what they answered and will discuss in the next episode. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners, because as you know, today is the day after the Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his loyal companions and his esteemed family members on the plains of Karbala on the day of Ashura. A lot of our esteemed listeners are in Karbala right now performing the ziyarat. We would like to ask them to pray for us and perform a pilgrimage and homage to Imam Hussein on our behalf. For those of our listeners who are not there, we would like to offer our condolences to them on this most momentous and grave day. You know, a lot of people ask, what is the significance of Arba'in? Why is it that we mourn, the master of the monotheists, the master of the martyrs, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the day of Arba'in, the day, the 40th day? Right, so this is historically significant because it's connected to the first pilgrim to the grave of to the grave of Imam Hussein on the and that is the famous companion of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari. It's been, historically it has been it's been narrated that, after the events of Ashura, after the events of that occurred, the very first pilgrim, to the grave of Imam Hussein, and this, the place, to visit Imam Hussein, was the famous companion of the Prophet Muhammad, Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari. And, the Prophet Muhammad, alayhi salam, he kind of predicted this beforehand. He told Jabir, and he kind of also informed him that, you will encounter my grandson, Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. And then the Prophet told Jabir, he said that when you meet him, convey my salams and convey my greetings and peace to him. This exactly is what transpired. And, in commemoration of this, the pilgrimage and the homage that this great sahabi, this great companion of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that he performed on this day, we reenacted his homage and his pilgrimage. And we also renew our vow to Imam Hussein on this day of Arba'in and this 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. And this number 40 is, it's very significant. A lot of the azkar and a lot of the prayers that we have, they are to be completed on a specific number of days. A lot of times it's 40, right? A lot of times it's 40. And the meeting of Moses on the mountain of Tur, right? These were also 40 and these kind of things. So this is a very significant number, and it kind of alludes to a sort of spiritual completion, right? So these are some of the significant reasons why we pay homage to Imam Hussein alayhi salam on this day. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at Arba'in and its significance. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
The truth behind the occupation.
My name is Yehuda Shaul. I grew up in what you would call the political right in Israel. I was an infantry combat soldier and a commander. I finished my service as a company sergeant. My sisters are settlers. One of my brothers is a settler today. Even though I grew up in the political right, I found myself in a place where I couldn't justify any more 90% of actions I took part in.
Yehuda Shaul is the co-founder of Breaking the Silence.
But after serving Israeli military forces as a combat soldier, he decided to do something that changed his life forever. He was the first Israeli soldier to tell the truth about the occupation of Palestine.
I really hope that I'll see the end of the occupation. The first real place I was deployed was Hebron. The second I arrived in Hebron, I started having doubts.
December 2016. The United Nations Security Council approves Resolution 2334. It reaffirms that Israeli settlements in Palestinian land are illegal and a violation of the international law. A few weeks later, with Donald Trump already in the White House, Israel announces the expansion of the West Bank settlements.
Between the United States and the State of Israel.
It means more settlers to add to the 600,000 that are now living in Palestinian land.
In the occupied territories in general, you basically have two communities, Palestinians and settlers. These two communities do not have the same rights. Palestinians are under military law, enforced by the army, and settlers are under Israeli civilian law, enforced by the Israeli police. So I arrived to Hebron, and my mission is to protect the settlers.
They come from all over the world, invited by Jewish organizations and travel agencies working for the settlers' cause.
I come from Los Angeles. I flew 15 hours yesterday to come show support for the Israelis.
Heavily guarded by Israeli soldiers, every tour of hate contributes to putting more pressure on Palestinians. On the days of the tours, Palestinians are with a gun at their heads, sieged inside their houses, while settlers explain to the tourists how they conquered the land. The first advice to the tourists is, keep away from the Palestinians or you will be killed. Settlers create hate tourism. The goal? Bring more settlers to set down in Palestinian land.
I'm 30 years old and I serve in a special unit called Dubdevan, specialized in counter-terror inside the West Bank specifically. Now, what's special about my unit is that it does undercover operations.
For at least half an hour, four men had been throwing stones at Israeli soldiers. But in a matter of seconds, they pulled out their guns, opening fire at the group of protesters.
We have soldiers, fighters, that know how to assimilate within the Palestinian society. They speak Arab, they dress as Arab.
The four men are, in fact, Israeli soldiers disguised as Palestinian. They are known as Mustarabim, an Arabic term that literally means Arab pretenders, infiltrators among Palestinians to carry out military missions.
With that ability, we're able to specific missions from kidnapping or stopping all kind of terrorists or wanted to complicated and even classified operations.
They also carry out selective executions. It was 12th of November 2015. About two dozen men wearing bulky jackets barged into a Palestinian hospital, pushing what appeared to be a pregnant woman in a wheelchair. But they were not heading to the delivery ward. The people caught on the hospital were, in fact, undercover Israeli officers. About 10 minutes later, the Israelis were on their way out, leaving behind a Palestinian man dead and taking his cousin with them.
And I remember really clearly, they divide us to two groups, and we're standing one in front of another. And then they told us, you need to imagine that you're going into the field. They're a Palestinian, a terrorist. And he's gonna shoot your mom, rape your sister, and he's gonna kill your little brother. And right before you go in, this is how you need to be in your minds.
I'll just give you one example. What we call in the IDF, making our presence felt. We start night shift patrol, 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning, 8-hour shift. We walk in the streets, bump into a house. It's a random house. The sergeant, the officer who leads the patrol, chooses these houses, wake up the family.
Now it's the middle of the night, around 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. We have our weapon, our face is covered with colors, so it would be intimidating.
Lock them in one room, separate men from women, search the place. You can yourself imagine the dynamics, what happens when a military unit bumps into your house 2 o'clock at night.
We knock on the door. The head of the family opens the door. The first time we realize this is a family we're going into.
Knock on some doors, make some noise, throw some shock grenades. Run to the other corner of the street, invade another random house. wake up the next family.
Open all the doors, open all the lights, open all the windows. Wake up all your family and bring them here to the living room. We need to question you.
Search the place, you know, climb on the roof, jump from one roof to another, go down through the balcony, wake up the next house.
Really exciting on one point, because this is the first time you're out there. On the other hand, this is not exactly the war zone that I was looking for, or I was really anticipating for.
That's basically how you pass here at Auschwitz. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From September 2000, when the second Intifada started, till today, and didn't stop for 1 second.
I remember one of the main operations that I've done. It was this big operation. We were all very proud of it. We decided we need to do a thing called a hot operation. Get into a house, we were blowing up the door with explosives. And the guy with the explosives put explosives on the door, and he put a little bit more. And we go and we hide in the corner, and 3, 2, 1, and huge boom went off. And I really remember it. And also seen it later on the camera. And right after the boom, we quickly go inside. Looks like the house was picking up in the air and thrown down. All the windows were broken. The doors were torn. And we quickly find the guy. We take him outside. We put him against the wall. And there's something really weird. The guy doesn't look like the guy that we're looking for. And the house doesn't exactly look like the house that was supposed to break in. Then we notice we blew up the wrong house. And we go out to the next corner, find the right house, and continue the mission.
Almost on a weekly basis, I would sit down with my soldiers and talk about values and morality. I remember one Thursday, you know, you just finish sitting down talking about values and then you start a patrol and you walk in the streets of the old city and suddenly we see a suspicious bag on the side of the road. Could be a bomb. Could be garbage. Both happened. What do? We grab the first random Palestinian and send him to pick it up. If it's a bomb, it would explode. If not, we continue. 2 hours ago, we spoke about the equality of human life and how every human being. And now we just proved that the life of a random Palestinian in the street is worth less than what? One bullet of an M16 that we can shoot it and check whether it's a bomb or not? 20 minutes waiting for a bomb, you know, engineer? What is obvious for me is that protecting Israel from terrorism is a very small part of what we do. What we mainly do in the occupied territories, it's about making sure Palestinians will never be free.
We are going back to Jerusalem Al-Quds to meet a so-called NGO. They call themselves My Truth, and the organization was born in the social media.
Controversy is being stirred up in Israel involving one of the country's most polarizing activist groups.
They stand for the values of Zionism, and their goal, tell the truth about the occupation of Palestine. But their truth denies any violation of human rights, killings, or even the occupation. Their members are veterans of the Israeli military forces and were created to fight breaking the silence.
My name is Lior Shahat. I've served in the IDF. I'm also a part of an organization called My Truth.
My name is Ben. I served in the IDF. My Truth was open up in direct response to breaking the silence.
My name is Eitan Meir. I'm the International Relations Coordinator for Im Tirtzu. I was born and raised in New Jersey in the United States, and I immigrated to Israel in 2008. Im Tirtzu, it's a non-governmental organization, and its goals are simple, to promote and advance Zionist values in Israel.
Do you think breaking the silence are traitors?
Breaking the silence gets millions and millions of shekels, foreign governmental entities in Europe. Denmark, Holland, Spain, even Germany, France. I don't know what their ultimate goal is in breaking the silence and all these other organizations that receive funding from foreign European governments in order to defame and delegitimize the State of Israel. I look at their actions, and their actions are 100% anti-Israel.
How do you feel when the Minister of Defense say that you are traitors?
Moshe Ya'alon, the former Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, says openly that Breaking the Silence is an organization of traitors and that they were banned from all military events. Lieutenant General Moshe Ya'alon, Defense Minister of Israel, after all the controversy and war crimes committed under his orders during the last operation in Gaza, he says I can still look at myself in the mirror.
I can look to myself in the mirror.
About the cases open in several civil courts across the world, he has an explanation. The world is lying.
When the Minister of Defense calls you a traitor and a spy, people on the street respond to this incitement, and then our office gets physically attacked once, our activists get physically attacked twice on campuses. And right-wing bullies published phone number of and the grandparents of our executive director, and they've been getting calls in the middle of the night. Your granddaughter was in a car accident, she's dead, she's in the hospital. Yeah? It's becoming very filthy. What we see in the last few years is more and more attempts by the government to try to silence anyone who speaks out about the occupation.
This is the website of Breaking the Silence. Here you can find hundreds of testimonies of soldiers that served the occupation in Gaza and the West Bank. They tell about crimes committed against the Palestinians. Abuse. Assassinations. Bribery. Confirmation of killings. Deaths. Everything documented with place, date, and names.
Also, a lot of times they find that, you know, with Breaking the Silence, a lot of their stories are not true. And you have the commanders of these soldiers coming and saying, hey, I was there. That's not how it played out. What are you talking about?
Breaking the Silence, it felt bad for me to see how they act.
I was there. I served in the Army. I was in very difficult situations in the Golani Brigade. And these things Breaking the Silence says did not happen. They either did not happen or exaggerated, and they certainly do not reflect the general doctrine of the IDF. So when you have Israelis going abroad and slandering the country, how could you expect the people of Europe to think otherwise?
My Truth is trying to fight against the rising support that Breaking the Silence is achieving around the world, among human rights organizations, but also governments.
There is a settler NGO financed by the Israeli government, sending spies undercover and to activist groups and human rights organizations to try to spread paranoia, and it's kind of like a Stasi-type behavior. They try to send us people who will give us false testimony so we will publish and lose our credibility. They send two guys undercover to our activist group, becoming friends with people, embraced by people, being brought into the homes of people while everything is recorded from hidden cameras. Sent a guy to give us state secrets about classified operations behind enemy lines in Syria so they can initiate a security investigation against us. Now, our researcher sits down with this guy, and during the interview, he insists four or five times to talk about Syria. And our researcher tells him, we're not interested in Syria. Let's move on, go back to the West Bank and Gaza. And right away, we sent this interview to the Israeli military censorship. And later on, we were able to confirm that the guy was a mole, was a spy for the settler organization. Then we released it to the media. You have a settler organization with Israeli government funding sending a soldier to breach national security laws to give us state secrets so they can initiate an investigation against us. It's the opposite of anything that makes sense. That's how far the Israeli political right has gone to try to silence anyone who speaks out against the occupation.
Breaking the Silence, you have to realize this is the credible minority of it. And in those cases that they are found to do it, there are laws. And
they say because soldiers are afraid to join Breaking the Silence.
Anyone that's been to Israel, and I encourage all the viewers to do so, will realize that Israelis are the last people, I would say, have a problem about speaking their mind.
Do you think there are many soldiers desiring to speak out inside the IDF? They are afraid to
do it? Yeah, what we know is that the Israeli government is trying to do many different things to try to make sure that soldiers will not speak out. For example, they're now taking us to court to force us to expose the identity of soldiers who served in Gaza in 2014 and testify to us so they can throw them to prison.
Every day during that operation, between 1 to 3 in the afternoon, the IDF had something called a humanitarian ceasefire to allow the local population in Gaza to go out, get the food they need, visit, you know, their relatives, breathe some fresh air. When you go to an organization like Hamas, unfortunately, that was the time when they would shoot the most rockets. We decided not to do anything because we decided it was a ceasefire, and we just allowed them to keep firing rockets, putting, you know, Palestinians on top of the Israelis.
Gaza is the most heavily populated enclave on the globe. 1.8 million people, and more than 1 million are refugees that before 1948 lived in what is now the occupation. This strip of land is, in fact, a huge refugee camp, but also an open-air prison, sieged by Israel by land, sea, and air. Last Israeli aggression on Gaza lasted 50 days of intensive bombings. Entire neighborhoods were reduced to rubble. Operation Protective Edge, as it was called by Israel, continued for 7 weeks, leaving behind around 3,000 deaths and around 500,000 Gazans displaced. And if it continues, experts believe, Gaza will become a place where no humans can live.
I would say the findings that we have after interviewing today over 80, not over 90, soldiers and officers who served in Operation Protective Edge is that the massive amount of civilian casualty, over 1,000 civilians, over 500 children, the massive amount of destruction of infrastructure, of civilian infrastructure. Yeah, about 18,000 apartments destroyed. It's not a coincidence. It's a direct result of two new doctrines that the IDF has adopted that shaped the way this operation was conducted, led to this destruction that we left behind. One sentence of four words that every Israeli combat soldier grows on. Yesh safek, en safek. When there is doubt, there is no doubt. If you're in a situation of doubt, you're not sure what the rules of engagement are, you don't see clear the target, the orders are to shoot to the knees and the bottom, and you're afraid you're going to hit the stomach, you have no doubt. You don't pull the trigger. Because once you pull the trigger, there is no way back. In Gaza, the same sentence was used? Exactly the opposite. There is doubt, there is no doubt. If you have doubt, if you're not sure, pull the trigger, because we prefer the mistakes to be at the expense of the other side.
You know, we don't have any red lines anymore for our security. Don't we stop somewhere and say, am I going to do this in the name of security? Really? You might say it's security, but I know that this is not my values.
The problem is the occupation. Any army in the world that will get the order to go and occupy another people forever will behave this way. And the only way you can do this is if you don't see Palestinians as equal human beings to you. Because to an equal human being to you, you just don't do this. That is immoral. And it's because the mission is immoral, our behavior was immoral. The problem is the political mission the army is sent to carry out. Hence, the solution is ending the occupation, is changing the political mission the army is sent to carry out.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَوْ يُوْ هُوْ بِلِيْهِ اسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the minbar you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
We started a topic and I wasn't able to finish it last night. Inshallah, tonight we will finish it. And I will go over just the main points that I covered last night as well, inshallah. And that had to do with this whole idea of, okay, we see Imam Hussein, what he did has lasted till today. Nothing can get in the way of it. And when we look around us, we see that there's a lot going on, but why is it that there's one thing out there that has lasted this long? Other things similar to it don't last long. They haven't lasted long. All right, let's move on to tonight now, what we want to talk about. The different elements in this story, the variety, just how Imam Hussein, like, he has everything in there for anybody who wants to relate to any aspect of this movement. All right? You look at the faces, you see new faces. Hur bin Yazid, oh, well, welcome. You were on Yazid's side, it's all good. You come on our side. So I'm a new face to the community, so what? Old faces, Habib bin Mudahir, Muslim bin Awsajah, these people. Converts, Wahhab, yes? Different colors of people. Yeah? They say Joan and these ones. All right, so everybody is there. Age-wise, also, you have it all. Habib is old. Qasim is young. Abdullah bin Hassan. Everyone, they're the young, old. 13-year-old, 18-year-old, 10-year-old, 6-month-old. He has everything in there for everybody to be able to relate to it. To the extent that, I mean, this is when Allah is the planner. Look how beautiful it's planned. On the night of Ashura, they were going to attack. Imam Hussein said, give us a little opportunity till tomorrow. I personally think there was some philosophy here as well. Not just that Imam Hussein says, I want to spend the night in worship. That he wanted to do that as well. But think about it. In the nighttime, you can't even see what's going on. Nothing will be recorded properly. It'll be over in a heartbeat. And then it'll be forgotten. Imam says, let's wait till tomorrow. If you're not going to do anything, give us that opportunity. And then tomorrow, when they have that initial attack and tens die on the side of Imam Hussein, still, he manages to figure it out in a way that he's able to send them one by one. So each tragedy is a tragedy of its own. Here today, we sit, the first 10 days, we talk about each of these shuhada. There's so much to talk about. If it happened all of a sudden and it was over, we wouldn't have. This is all the plan of Allah. So when you line things up with Allah's will, the plan of Allah is going to work. It's going to take effect. But you have to have ikhlas. Imam Hussein is the pinnacle of ikhlas. And so when all of that happens and Imam Hussein is leading the way, you have this. You have the women, Zainab alayhi salam, the wife of Zuhair. Right? You have these ones who pushed forward, the ones who didn't want to come. And if they didn't come, they themselves went. Bibi Zainab, of course, Abdullah bin Ja'far didn't come for whatever reason it was. Bibi Zainab still came. Zuhair wasn't sure, should I not? His wife pushed him to go. You've seen Mukhtar Nama, probably some of you. You've seen that part. She forces him to go. Forces him meaning convinces him to go. But in the beginning, she had to use some force. And so there's so many lessons in here. Wahab, the only female shaheed of Karbala who went and died with her husband fighting. Yeah? All of this, you have all of that. You have people that weren't like proper Shia. Zuhair himself, was he proper Shia? No, there was no Shia Sunni back then, of course, but in the sense that we have it today. But what you did have was Uthmanis, they called them back then. You know what that means? That means a person who says that what happened to Uthman and all of that was wrong. They're on that side. Zuhair is one of them. He's famous for that. He's on the side in the camp of Imam Hussein. So anyone, the one who's committed big sins, whatever, everyone has something to relate to on Ashura and in the army of Karbala. And so this is another thing that we have that we don't find elsewhere. Usually movements has people that are like-minded. That's it. This has everyone in it because this is the beauty of Ahl Kisa, brothers and sisters. The five, the Panjatan, these five were very, very special. Imam Hussein knows this. So he's able to bring everybody in. It's so beautiful. The barakat of these five. And of course, he's the last one. So this is the last opportunity, by the way. Imam Sajjad could not have done what Imam Hussein did on Ashura. He could not have brought in those that Imam Hussein brought in. The next one. The next element. Pure haq. I've said this again and again. Ashura embodies pure haq versus pure batil. Haq, this is just what haq is all about. Wherever there is haq, you will have everlastingness. The Quran says, قُدْ جَاءَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلِ إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا. Say, O Prophet, tell them, haq has come. And so batil is going to leave now. إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا. Batil is always going to be going out. Is everlasting. Haq, in one way or another, is connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is the haq. And so however much our actions, our deeds and endeavors enjoy haq, inshallah, to that extent, they enjoy everlastingness. And then here I am mixing it up with my, with whatever other intentions I have. And I say, how come I didn't get famous? How come this? How come that? It's not about these things. And it's going to be harder in this day and age when you're even praying. Sometimes you take a selfie, you put it up online, right? Like, people got to know what I'm doing. No, I would say ikhlas and haqq, they come hand in hand. Another matter to discuss when it comes to this haqq though, is that just because you're on haqq doesn't necessarily mean, yes, that... Yeah, I wanted to say this. This is an important point. That haqq and ikhlas, although they come hand in hand, we have to be careful. These are two different things. Yes? If there is haqq, ikhlas has to be there. But if ikhlas is there, it doesn't necessarily mean haqq is also there. Going back to what we talked about us being fallible beings. Imam Ali in Nahj al-Balagha, he says something. Sometimes you're like, Imam Ali, are you taking the side of the Khawarij? As if. He says it. He says they have ikhlas. He says in Nahj al-Balagha, anyone has a problem with that? Go see what Nahj al-Balagha says. He's calling out Muawiyah to show where Muawiyah stands on that spectrum of haqq versus batil. He talks about the Khawarij. Imam Ali. He says the Khawarij, what their problem was, they aimed for haqq, they missed it. They missed the target. That means ikhlas. They're after the haqq, they missed the target. And so what is that? That makes them wrong. But they still had ikhlas, according to that. Now, of course, I don't know if it'll be accepted because, I mean, Imam Ali, the haqq himself is in front of you. Come on. But the point I'm trying to make is this. He says that Muawiyah, though, he aimed for batil and he hit the target in the middle of the eye, in the middle of the forehead between the eyebrows. Yes? So we just have to remember this all the time. Just because I have ikhlas doesn't mean haqq is going to come with it. Yes, if I have haqq and everything, part of haqq is ikhlas. But vice versa? No. Right now, the Maraji, for example. Regarding moon sighting, let's say. Huh? Are they both on haqq? The one that says if it's sighted like this? And no, one of them is wrong for sure. But they both have ikhlas, it'll be accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, inshallah. I just want to highlight this again. Just remember, brothers and sisters, it's not just ikhlas either. We have to do our due diligence to figure out what we're supposed to do in different scenarios.
Oh, Hussein, you'll live forever. To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com ISRIB.org/EN.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Viewpoints. I'm Ata, the host of this program. Within the studio for today's discussion on how Arba'in procession will revive the Husseini movement all around the world, we have two guest speakers for today's discussion, Shaykh Rouhani and Brother Habib. Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Brother and Habib.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me. It's always an honor and pleasure to be with you.
You're welcome, Brother. So for today's discussion, we want to talk about forming Shia community and the role of the majalis, or it's better to say somehow the majlis or majalis refer to these gatherings and the ceremonies and the sessions that are held for commemorating the Ahlul Bayt, especially Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In brief, what is the role of the majlis in forming the Shia community in and outside, we can say, the majlis? Okay, Brother Habib, let's start with you, brother.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. A man once heard, a man was heard by Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam stating, "Oh Allah, let me finish off from the people. Let me be self-sufficient from people." Imam Sajjad alayhi salam told him, "No, not like that. Do not pray and supplicate like that. Innama an-nasu bin-nas. People are for people. People need people. Rather say, Allahumma ighdini an shirari khalqika," the rest of the supplication. The idea that I want to take from this saying is that people need people. We are, as human beings, what they call in philosophy, madaniyun bit-tab', which is pretty much a social human being.
Yes, sociable. Social.
We need other people. We need someone to build the houses. We need for that person that's building the houses to help him get married. We need that person that's helping him get married to make the bread, to make the water, to bring the water, to fix this, and to do that. We need each other. We need a community. And how does this usually happen? There has to be a place where we see each other. If each one of us is sitting in their house, not going to gatherings, not sitting with each other, we cannot build a community. We cannot see the needs of our brothers in faith and humanity. And that is why we have in the saying is that rebuke and criticize the concept of i'tizal, which is to abandon society, to abandon community. We have this concept that, why is it rebuked by the Imam alayhi salam? Imam alayhi salam says, how does this person learn his religion? How does this person teach his religion? How